Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on. Welcome to the 10 Adventures podcast. This week, we're back talking with my co-host, Karen, who is out cycling in Europe. She's just completed cycling the Camino Frances to Santiago de Compostela. And so I've been following her on Instagram and have been really amazed at her posts. And I wanted to learn a little bit more and wanted to share this incredible journey with more people, because I know it's a very popular trip that people are thinking about. So Karen, welcome back to the podcast. Where are you right now?
We just left Santiago today. So we've spent the last couple of weeks cycling the Camino Frances. Officially, that starts in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is in the Pyrenees in France, and ends in Santiago. But because of where we were coming from, we decided to start in Pamplona, which is in Spain. So we just missed a short distance at the very beginning.
For people that don't know anything about the Camino Frances, they may not even know very much about northern Spain. Where does the route go? Is it along the coast? Is it kind of in the plains?
Well, the route goes in northern Spain, but it's not along the coast, though there is a Camino that goes along the north coast, and that would be the Camino Norte. But this is the Camino Frances is the most popular Camino. I think that you see the largest number of people doing it. And it runs in the north, but just south of the mountains that rim the coast of Spain. And as I mentioned, it starts in the Pyrenees in just over the border in France at Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. And then it kind of comes down into some rolling hills, starting in Pamplona, and that part ends in Burgos, which is a big cathedral town. And then there's a section called the Meseta, which are the high plains, which goes from Burgos to León. So it's a completely different kind of topography there. Shortly after León, you're going more into Galicia, so more kind of mountains and a lot more green. Like it's because it's very, I think it's wet, and that's why you see a lot of green there until you get to Santiago.
And so how many kilometers was your route?
Ooh, good question. We started the trip along the coast of France, so I know we're at 1,720 kilometers since the start, but I'm not sure where we're at from since we started in Spain or since Pamplona.
How many days were you riding then on the Camino?
Another good question, Richard.
You're seeing firsthand how when you get on these trips, tracking days. What day is it? Where am I? All these things. When you work a regular 9-to-5 job, those are questions that are easy to answer. When you've been cycling for a month, those are difficult questions to answer.
Well, that's true. I know I'm on day 34 of the cycling, but I can't remember which day the Camino officially started. And you're exactly right. My husband frequently says multiple times during the day, what day of the week is it? What day of the week is it? And he keeps saying, it's Saturday today. And I'll be like, no, it's Thursday. And we'll go over that over and over again.
How hard is it to ride the Camino Frances?
I think it probably depends on which route you take. So my understanding, and this was the information I found, there's two ways to cycle the Camino. One would be a way where you pretty much mimic the route that the walkers take, and that would have you on gravel a lot of the time, and they suggest you need a mountain bike with that. Or alternatively, we found a mostly paved, not all paved, but mostly paved route as well. And that route, it was quite doable. You know, there was some big days climbing at the end, I think a couple days where we did 1,000 meters of elevation gain. But the Meseta, as an example, was very little elevation gain. That was the high plain. And it's interesting, in the past, I'd read blogs about people when they were hiking the Camino, and they say that some people find the Meseta long and maybe tedious because the scenery is quite flat. It would remind me a lot of the prairies. And so some people choose to take the bus from Burgos to León and skip the Meseta. But my husband and I, we both really enjoyed that part. We found the scenery very, very pretty.
And I've heard some people, they are doing it on e-bikes. And that's the way that for people that maybe don't want to deal with the challenge, you know, they're using e-bikes to help with the up and down or a little bit of the distance. Did you see many people on e-bikes?
Actually, it's amazing how many e-bikes we've seen in Europe. Well, more so when we were in France, which isn't the Camino, but yes, e-bikes here are really popular. And in one of the hostels that we stayed at, there was even a couple of e-bikes charging in the bike storage room there. So definitely, like, I think e-bikes are really getting popular over here. We've seen a lot.
Cycling is so great. And e-bikes just open it up to so many more people that maybe don't have to deal with the hassle of climbing with full panniers or whatnot.
The other thing about as far as challenge is that it's pretty easy to get luggage transport on the Camino as well. So because it's a very common route, there's, you know, the option to have your luggage moved for you. I mean, obviously, if you're on a tour or you're on a self-guided tour, that's usually provided. But even for independent travelers, you can arrange luggage transport for, you know, not too expensive.
Now, following along your trip on Instagram, one thing I've noticed is some incredible looking meals. Am I correct in assuming that the food has been one of the nice parts of the Camino?
It has been very good, but it's very similar is what we found. So the thing I really love is I really love the coffee in the morning. I usually have two or three cups of cafe con leche. I just like the taste of the coffee here. And you can go into any bar. There's always bars along the way, little tiny places. They're open early in the morning and you'll be sitting beside some old guys having a beer, but you can just have a cafe con leche. And in the mornings, we usually have tostada, which is, you know, bread with a thick crust with butter and jam, usually peach jam. Although the other common option would be to have tostada with olive oil and a tomato sauce. I think Spanish people have that and English or Canadian people would have the butter and jam. Like the dinners, there are some regional variations, but and in particular in Galicia, what's been really popular here, and we always see it advertised everywhere, is octopus and seafood, because now we're by the sea. So, in fact, we had octopus, which is called pulpo here, today while we were cycling.
You mentioned the delicious coffees. I remember when I was cycling in Tuscany, it was literally just, you know, coffee stop to coffee stop where you get a little cafe and maybe you get a little pastry or something. And that was, it was a nice way to kind of break up every 90 minutes or an hour, getting a, you know, an incredible coffee for, you know, a euro and a delicious pastry. It definitely gives a lot of fuel when you're on one of these trips. Now, some of the photos have been in some really pretty little villages. For the route that you did, are there any villages you stopped at or you rode through that really stood out?
Wow, there's so many. And like I mentioned, the flavor changes so much. So we started in Pamplona, and that's the, you know, the town, village, small city, you know, where they run the bulls. So that's quite pretty, especially the main square there. And then you just go through, like, you're always going through little town after little town, and the Camino routes you through all the little towns. There's just one after another. You know, there's a really beautiful bridge coming out of Punta La Reina. There's a beautiful, beautiful cathedral in Burgos. Like, It's like you're walking into Disneyland with all the spires that are rising up. And in fact, we were lucky we got a place at a restaurant to have lunch the day we rode through Burgos. So we kind of sat outside, you know, with the sun shining and these magnificent spires going up. It was kind of like being a princess in Disneyland. The cathedral in León is really, really beautiful. It has a big square with restaurants and bars around it. So I know we had a glass of wine while we were looking at that cathedral in León. In the Meseta, we stayed at a really little village called Castro Harris. And I didn't know anything about it going into it. And it's really quite small, but it was really pretty. It had a view looking out into kind of the farm fields. It had some nice, you know, really nice churches. I don't know. It's kind of like you're just going through one little town with, you know, very quaint after another. Once we got into Galicia and we're climbing more, you go to like just the tiniest of towns. Like, I don't know, I think there's 20 buildings at Osobrero, which is a kind of near the top of one of the passes that you go over, you know, that has a church and a few buildings, you know, with, you know, but you're at the top, so views looking out all over. And then there's Santiago as well, which is totally, really picturesque. We spent 3 days there to have some rest days, and just walking around, you just never get tired.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned spending a few days in Santiago for rest days. I know your Instagram post kept on being, "We got a ride today, a storm's coming." And I got the impression you were really, you know, tired and wanted a rest day. But you just, you know, when you have good weather and, you know, the future looks bad, you just kept on riding. What was that the case? Did the storm finally come, or was it just kind of, you know, the weather forecast wasn't quite right?
So at the beginning of our ride, we had one problem, which was there was a big long weekend, and in the whole valley kind of from Pamplona to beyond Burgos, which is like several days of riding, there was no accommodation available for the Saturday night. We found one little place that was in the middle of nowhere right on the freeway that had accommodation, but that was the only thing going for that night. So it kind of pressured us, like we had to get there by Saturday. So that's what drove us at the beginning. And then the weather thing became an issue because it kept threatening to have, you know, 3 or 4 days of rain. So every day we'd wake up and it was sunny and we'd like, oh, well, we better keep going before that rain comes. It did eventually come, but it turned out to be one day, and it was while we were resting in Santiago. So yes, we would have loved to have a rest day in Burgos, but we couldn't because that was on that long weekend when we couldn't get any accommodation. We would have loved to have a rest day in León because it's really pretty, but that was when we were chasing the good weather, which we were fortunate. We did get it all.
So Karen, when you got to Santiago, what was it like? You know, everyone goes to the mass. Is that something you did? You know, was it a spiritual event for you?
Well, so the big thing is when you enter Santiago, the walkers and the cyclists, they usually go to this square outside the cathedral. And a lot of the photos you see on social media or advertising brochures are taken in that square. So it's kind of fun because when you get to the square, whether you're walking in or cycling in, there's lots of people around. They're all in their little groups of who they've been walking or cycling with, and everyone's taking photos of each other. And I don't know, there's kind of a feeling there of accomplishment, because if you think about the walkers, if they've been doing the Camino Frances, they've been at it for 6 weeks usually, right? And a lot of the time the walkers, they'll just sit there. So you'll see groups of people sitting on the ground staring at the cathedral. So that's a moment that's pretty cool. And then as far as like going to mass in Santiago, so the cathedral does do a special pilgrims mass, and it's like 5 or 6 times a day. So it's not infrequent. And then they also have another Mass that's done in English as well. And then they have Mass for the locals as well. So that cathedral is very busy with people attending. There's something famous where they have a big, you know, pot of incense that they swing back and forth. Unfortunately, they don't do that regularly. They only do it on some days of the week or special occasions, or if people have paid for it, I believe. So when we did go to one of the pilgrims' masses, because my spouse is Catholic and he wanted to go, and it was all in Spanish, and I went with him. It was a great experience. From his perspective, he's Catholic, so he said he could, even though it was all in a different language, there's so much ritual to a Catholic Mass that he could follow what was happening just because he knows it from years growing up and having it rote. And for me as a non-Catholic, I just enjoyed being in the space, and it was remarkably full, which I was surprised, you know, because it's the middle to the end of October, so there aren't as many pilgrims, but there were still a lot of people at that Mass. So, yeah, it's quite nice to just see everyone.
Was there anything that surprised you? You know, we all go into, you know, we have a preconception of the pilgrimage and, you know, whether or not it's reading books or seeing videos or movies. We all kind of go in there expecting something. What surprised you, or what wasn't like what you thought it would be?
Well, I think one thing that I alluded to earlier, that I had heard that the Meseta, that central part of the Camino, was kind of boring, and, you know, that people in the commented how, oh, they just took the bus to miss that part if they didn't have time. So what was surprising to me was that we both really enjoyed that part. We found that really, it was really a lot more beautiful than I was expecting. I was expecting it to be dull, but we really enjoyed it. I think also the Osobrero, which is that little tiny village high in the mountains as you're entering into Galicia. When you enter into Galicia, like, it's really lush and you're in the mountains, so there's lots of climbing and you're on little tiny roads. And then you get to this village, and I wasn't expecting there to be anything there. But in fact, it was like the cutest little tiny village up there. I wish we had stayed there, actually, because it would have been very beautiful.
Now, I know a lot of people who walk the pilgrimage, especially when they do the full trip from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, they talk about the relationships they make with other people on the trail, because there are so many people and you start to get to know people, you see them every day. When you're cycling, did you have the same kind of sense of community where you're bumping into the same cyclists, or is it because everyone's riding different lengths each day that you don't necessarily have that same level of community?
We didn't meet a lot of other cyclists while we were doing it. But remember, we're doing it kind of middle of October, right? I don't know if people were doing it like more in high season, if there would be more cyclists that they would run into. So no, we didn't meet as many people cycling. And then also because we're not doing the same route as the walkers, you know, like you said, I did walk the Camino in the past, and the fact that you're walking the same routes and you keep running into the same people, you do start talking to people more as a walker. So yeah, we didn't have that experience.
I know you're continuing on from the Camino Francés, and you weren't sure originally, you know, kind of this whole trip has been, you know, let's figure things out as we're going along. Where is your next, what's your next destination? Where are you going to go next?
Well, our flight home is from Lisbon, so we've just started cycling from Santiago de Compostela down, and we're going to go into Portugal, and we're roughly following the Camino Português. There's three different paths for the Camino Português, and we're going to try and take the coastal route as much as we can, yep, and eventually get to Lisbon.
And then how many days do you have left before you're done your big trip?
2.5 weeks. I actually think we'll get to Lisbon before we need to, but if that's the case, no problem. We'll just go down further south along the coast and enjoy some good weather, because it's quite warm there right now.
I'm very jealous. I'm very jealous of that. I know Portugal is just exploding with cycle touring these days, and there's just, you know, every area they've now built, you know, infrastructure to really grow cycle touring in Portugal. And from everyone I've talked to, it's just an incredible place to ride with, you know, warm weather, great food, beautiful views. Obviously, especially if you're on the coast, just looking out at the sea every day will be very nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. For us, though, I think it'll be a little bit harder with route finding for this part because we're going against the grade, you know, like most people are cycling from Lisbon or Porto north to Santiago, and we're going south. So,
oh yeah, all the signs will be facing the other way. So you'll be able to constantly look behind you to see where the signs are.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, you know, because we're on bikes, sometimes they're not even signs, right?
Yeah, no, that's fun. That'll give you a bit more excitement instead of just following the broad path like you did on the Camino. Well, it sounds like you're having an incredible trip and enjoying, you know, this first trip post-pandemic. I guess since we last talked, has anything changed in terms of COVID restrictions, or is it still really comfortable to travel in Europe, you know, with the pandemic going on at the same time?
Yeah, we're finding it really comfortable. The rules in Spain are different than the rules in France. So in France, they have the QR code that you have to present when you go to a restaurant or bar, cafe, or an indoor venue. And in Spain, they're not using the QR code, but they do, you know, have mandatory indoor masking. So, but that's not a problem. Like, we're used to that from whatever 20 months of pandemic anyway. Yeah, and actually in Spain right now has a extremely low COVID rate, so that's reassuring as well. And people here are really good at masking. Like, even sometimes you're in the narrow streets outside, like, you'll find half the people are masked, and that's outside. So I found that quite surprising.
It's kind of a non-issue for large parts of Europe. Like, you know, they dealt with, you know, kind of the crazy first wave, and since then, you know, if all they have to do is deal with masks, they've been it's been, you know, kind of a non-issue because it's so minor compared to what they dealt with in the past. So well, that sounds fantastic that you're having this incredible trip, all this warm weather. If people want to follow along, they can go on Instagram, and it's at Adventure After All. And it's been really fun. You've been actually kind of telling the story of each day through Instagram. So it's not just been a photo, but it's been a photo and the story, which I've enjoyed following along. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for being on the podcast again, Karen.
No problem.
Have a great rest of your trip.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.